And this hour, of course, we've got James Fox. We're going to be back in a moment talking about his work with Chasing UFOs, which is a program that's going to premiere on June 29th on the National Geographic Channel, 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It's a pioneering team of investigators probing reports of alien abductions, UFO sightings, military cover-ups in a new 8-part series, of course, which you'll hear a lot about on this program as well. We'll be back in a moment with James Fox and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie with you, James Fox. James, how many investigators did they have on this series?
There is Erin Ryder, who's also she's cast, but she's also co-executive producer, which is an extremely challenging job.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's, you know, running the show in the field, and she's also on the show. So it was very impressive, a very tough job. And she's sort of somewhere in the middle of believer and skeptic. I think she's kind of, you know, on the fence with the whole thing. But I think as the show progressed and she met more and more witnesses, especially some of the international stuff, I think she became more of a believer. And she's actually, funny enough, from the Hudson Valley region. So she remembers hearing that growing up as a kid, the Hudson Valley, you know, Night Seas, the book by Dr. John Hynek about the Hudson Valley sightings.
Yep.
Then we have a wonderful guy who I like to refer to him as the guy who's got more degrees than a thermometer, and that's Ben McGee, scientist. And he's a geologist, radiation specialist, and he would like nothing more than for us to give him some evidence that he can take back into a lab and analyze and study and determine one way or the other. And that's kind of like Ryder's and I's job, to be honest with you. It's like, I want nothing more to find that piece of evidence to give to him. And we've gotten close, but not quite yet. And while I'm on the topic, if anyone out there has some, you know, UFO case or some evidence, photographic, or some any good case in general that they'd like to share with us for possible, you know, future episodes, please, 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 with sugar on top, contact me through my website. I know what I saw, themovie.com, and my email's on there, and let me know. And also, any comments you have for, you know, criticism or any comments at all on the series and anything I can do to make it better, and I will, and I respond to everybody.
Well, like the History Channel's Ancient Aliens, James, if this is successful, I'm sure there'll be another season.
I will do everything in my power to ensure, you know, as much good, solid witness and evidence testimony as possible, as will, you know, Erin Ryder and Ben McGee. So. And the fact that we've got National Geographic behind us and Ping Pong Productions, it's a real boon.
Super. You went to Brazil to investigate a case. Tell me about that.
Well, it's funny, actually, because A.J. Javard, UFO researcher in South America,
right,
invited me about a year ago down to Brazil, a place called Peribe, actually, to give a little presentation. And before I left, of course I went because I wanted to go to Brazil. Need I say more? And before I left, I got contacted by a fellow UFO researcher. He's like, "Oh, you have to look into the Virginia case." And I was like, "Oh, I'm vaguely familiar with that. What do you mean?" The UFO crash in 1996, and the alien bodies were not only recovered but still alive. And I thought, "Really? Come on. You're talking about like the Roswell of Brazil, where aliens were actually seen or witnessed by local townspeople of Virginia, which is roughly 4 to 5 hour drive north of Sao Paulo." In this town, and I thought this is really far-fetched, and whatever. I'll look into it while I'm over there with, you know, not high expectations. Well, I actually did meet a few researchers as well as some of the witnesses when I was in South America, and I thought, in Brazil, and I thought, wow, maybe there's actually something to this. And when I came home, I talked to Dr. Lear, and he had written a book on it, and he knew a lot about it, actually. And I started doing more and more research, and then I really encouraged National Geographic to make that one of our episodes. And fortunately, we did.
Perfect.
And we got the holy grail of witnesses. As far as I'm concerned, we got, you know, remember, keep in mind, this case happened in 1996. We got three of the primary witnesses in broad daylight, right on the edge of town of Virginia, saw a living creature, roughly 3.5 feet tall. If you want, I'll describe to you according to what they're...
Please. I'd love to hear this.
3.5 feet tall. It was sort of slouched down position. According to these witnesses, it looked a little feeble. And it had spindly arms and legs. It had the skin, and I'm just giving you verbatim of how they described it to me, the skin of like an organ, like, for instance, a heart or a kidney. and like oily and dark. And then it had these ridges on, three ridges on the head with big red eyes and split toes on the feet and three digits on the hands. And it looked kind of feeble and non-threatening, but the girls, I think, were ages somewhere around 14, 16, and either 18 or 21. And they were absolutely horrified at the sight of this thing and ran screaming through this field. And they saw it, I think, within 20 feet. And they ran through the field, and they heard these construction workers just moments later say they must have seen the same creature that we've seen. So people in the town were seeing it. Well, the entire town was cordoned off by the military. And the one of the officers who apparently contained one of these creatures and took it into the local hospitals. And by the way, we went banging on the doors of local hospitals. We were asking questions in downtown square. We were really trying our best to get a hold of these witnesses. And reluctantly, it was difficult to get people to come forward. And the officer that handled one of these creatures, he was 23 years old. He was very, very fit. And 3 weeks later, he died of an unknown infection. And just before he died, he told his family and immediate friends what happened, because he was sworn to secrecy, but he was dying, so he just told everybody what happened. And I met those friends. I met part of the family while we were there. And it's just a phenomenal case. And one other thing I'll mention to you very quickly is while we were in Sao Paulo, we met with a general, José Carlos Pereira. And I think he's still quasi-active. And he was a general in the brigadier in the Air Force. And he, you know, initially, you know, they gave us, it's really funny because we got these, you know, these parameters for the interview, right? Like, okay, yeah, we can talk about this, we can talk about that, but we can't really talk about that. I thought, all right, well, we'll talk about the stuff that we're here to talk about. And then once we got all the stuff we want, hey, what do I got to lose? I'll ask them the questions that I'm not really supposed to ask.
That's right.
What the heck? I mean,
sign of a good newsman.
Hey, I want the truth. You know, so I said to him towards the end of the interview, what about the Virginia case? He said, well, that was an Army affair. They're dealing with stuff that's on the ground, and I'm the Air Force, so I don't really know. I said, okay, all right, General. Let me rephrase the question. If it happened, could you talk about it? He said, no. So I thought, well, that's good. So when the camera stopped rolling, I grabbed the translator and walked him back to his car. We were in an airplane hangar in Sao Paulo, and I said, General, please, what's going on? And he looked at me and he said, well, we're being visited. I said, I know that. I said, what about the Virginia case? And he winked and patted me on the shoulder and said, a lot more happened. What did he say exactly, Marco? A lot more happened than something big definitely happened.
Than meets the eye, right?
Yeah, and he patted me on the shoulder and got in the car and left. So then, you know, obviously in the following days, having met the girls and some of these other witnesses, it's a phenomenal case.
It really is. I'm looking forward to
this. Are you familiar with the Virginia case?
Yeah, I've heard it, but I've not heard it that in depth as when you just told
us. Most people in America have never heard of this. And I know it sounds crazy. Believe me, I do. I had the same response to it when I heard about it. But I've been to Brazil twice in the last year, and I've met with a lot of witnesses, a lot of researchers, and I'm convinced it happened.
Oh, yeah, I know. And you know, AJ's a great investigator.
AJ's phenomenal. Love that guy.
He covers great stuff. And he's good. Let's take some calls here with you, James. This hour's flying by here. We'll go to Walter in Eatonville, Washington on the wild card line. Go ahead, Walter. Get us started.
Yes. Let's see. I've had.
Where'd you go, Walter?
You're breaking up.
Walter. Yeah, Walter was breaking up, unfortunately. Try to get a better line there, Walter. Let's go to Darlene, though, east of the Rockies in Buchanan, Michigan. Hi, Darlene. Go ahead.
Well, hi, George. How you doing?
Good. Well.
I have a question. How serious do you think our government is about covering up this activity?
Is that for me?
That's for you, James.
Well, according to the witnesses that I met with, they're pretty doggone serious. You know, Colonel Alexander, and I really respect the colonel. Well, let me just preface this whole thing. That the fact that he's coming forward at all, saying that UFOs are real, that's a very bold move.
It is.
And I respect that tremendously. However, I do disagree with his opinion that there's no cover-up, because I've met with so many military and civilian witnesses, and the better the evidence, the more likely their encounter with an unknown government agency that took it and never to be seen or heard from again. That, to me, is a cover-up.
Well, and as I've told Richard Dolan, I've told Stephen Bassett, whom you both know, James, that the government's not going to disclose. We're not going to get the information from the government. It's going to come from people like you who go out and do the hard work and get the answers for us.
You know, this is very, very interesting point. Let me make this point really quickly. One of the things that three witnesses said, and I don't think this will make it in the episode, but the three girls said that right after the incident happened, they never said UFO ET. They said, we saw a creature. Once the story started coming out and little bits and pieces of the puzzle started filling in, they started to realize, hey, a UFO crashed. People saw it crashing outside the outskirts of Virginia. And then, of course, people started seeing these entities, and they put it together like, hey, a UFO crashed. Alien bodies were, or aliens were recovered. Well, the Air Force came up to these, because the military came approached these three girls, their primary witnesses, very known in the community, and said, we'll give you a large sum of money to recant your statements and say that you just made it all up and it's not what happened at all. And none of those women did that. And their lives have suffered so much in the process. So it seems like it's not just happening in America. It's happening around the world.
So true. First-time caller, Frank, West Los Angeles. Go ahead, Frank.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
My buddy Vince suggested that I read Fire in the Sky. And, I had seen the movie, and I just really, really wanted to give a shout-out to Travis Walton. What an amazing, intelligent man he is. For writing the book, through going through the experience, and to articulate everything perfectly, blow by blow, each interview for the last, 10, 15 years, freaking amazing.
And to think about what he sacrificed to come forward for the rest of us. I have so much respect for that man.
Oh, yeah. He does it. He's no nonsense. He just says it the way it is.
You can take what that guy says to the bank.
Yep. Whatever happened to him, it's very strange. I mean, but these are classic cases. He's like Betty and Barney Hill,
absolutely,
that abduction case. I mean, this is it. This is history, in front of
us. Barney Hill, granted, those two were allegedly abducted. But, you know, for Travis to have six guys, all pass lie detector tests, and watch this thing strike him, the manhunt and everything else, and then for them to maintain a story that they know the locals are going to go, you guys are out of your minds, back in 1975. And into their guns.
Can you imagine, James, they thought that these guys killed him?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that's one of the things. I talked to this guy, John Goulette, who's one of the witnesses when I was there. I don't know if that'll make it into the segment. It might make it on some of the webisode stuff on natgeo.com. But he said the officers were literally taking him up to the site and going, come on, let's just get this over with. You know you killed this guy. Just, where's the body? Come on, just show us where the body is. Where did you bury him? Where did you hack this guy up? Come on, just let's get this over with. Let's make this easy on ourselves. We know you killed him. And they all maintained their story. No, we didn't. They had dogs and helicopters, and it was an intensive 5-day manhunt.
Yeah, incredible. Let's go to Florida. Curtis is with us. He's in Inglis, Florida. You getting hit with any Tropical Storm Debbie rain, Curtis? Are you okay there?
Oh, absolutely. We probably had 14 inches here. I live just south, two towns south of where it came in. Just south of Cedar Key. I was abducted at the age of 9. I lived in Beaver County, Pennsylvania, where it was a hotbed in the early 60s, and had a sighting with six of my friends that was just as clear as a day. It was a classic UFO with the lights going around it. And then we used to go to Wekiwachi, Florida, and it was another hotbed of UFO activities. And there was a craft that came right over us in a fog. There was 40 witnesses, and it scanned us with like a red beam, sort of like a copy machine. But anyway, the last day of May, just recently, I went to the end of the road here at the coast, and I took a picture of the sunset, and I didn't really look at it. It's on my cell phone, and there's a very clear picture of a UFO on it. And I'm wondering, is that something that's that happens, that you take a picture and it shows up on a picture, but it's something you can't see?
Yeah, it's funny, actually. A lot of people take pictures of you know, mountaintops or ridges or plateaus, and, you know, just beautiful scenic shots, and then something, you know, that they didn't notice with the naked eye. Perhaps it was moving too quickly. Perhaps they just didn't notice or blend it in. That picks up on camera. I feature a couple of those in my last film, but, yeah, definitely I've heard that many times.
James, what do you think?
Any chance I could see that photograph?
We're Let's get them to email it to you. Do you want to give us an email? Go ahead.
I could. Without giving my email. Well, I guess it's the same.
Well, I tell you what. He can email it to me, and we can get it to you. Is that all right?
Yep. Or you can just go to I Know What I Saw, and then my email's on there.
IKnowWhatISaw.com?
IKnowWhatISawTheMovie.com, and you can email me directly from there.
Okay, great. James, you've been investigating these for years. What do you think's going on? What do you think they are?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because I hear different perspectives from so many different people, and Colonel Alexander, John Alexander, has a very interesting perspective on it. And I think, you know, he said to me, James, you have to realize this is much more complex than just ETs coming from our interplanetary people coming here. This could be, you know, interdimensional, time travel, all of the above. And I think it might just be that. But God, one is only forced to speculate about it, right? One of the things I remember when I interviewed Colonel Corso, and I know there's been lots of debate on the veracity of his story and whatnot, but I believed the guy just because I met him. I looked him in the eyes. I shook his hands. I met his grandchildren. I met his son. He certainly believed what he was telling me. And he said one of the things that puzzled them the most in the Pentagon at the time in the 60s was the fact that the lack of provisions on the craft. He said, you know, if these were time travelers or something, you'd think they'd have, like, some provisions, right?
They don't have anything.
They had, like, some pens, but it turned out to be sort of lasers and hardly anything.
They could be robots, James.
One of the things that's really interesting that Ben, the scientist on our show, pointed out to me, he said, James, look at a flying saucer. Look at the shape. And I said, yeah, okay, look at the shape. He said, what does that say to you? I don't know. What does it say to me, Ben? I don't know. He said, it's designed to travel through an atmosphere. Think about it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't make that shape. So, and then I thought, well, that's interesting. Remember when Travis Walton had talked about, you know, when he came to on the table and he eventually got led out of the craft by the creature, you know, the android, the humanoid looking creature. All right. So he got led out of there, and he said, I wasn't sure if it was a hangar or if it was maybe the inside of a much larger craft. I don't know. But there were lots of saucers varying in sizes parked within this either hangar or larger UFO. And maybe they're intergalactic, maybe they're, you know, interplanetary, and they come in massive UFOs, and they send smaller probes out, little flying saucers to go investigate or probe or whatever on Earth. Or maybe they're time travelers, or maybe they're interdimensional. I think maybe it could be all of the above. I mean, Jesus, look how many doggone galaxies are out there, with each galaxy containing billions of stars.
There's probably a huge mothership. They have learned how to bend space and time because they've got a jump start on us, obviously. And it's probably no big deal. I mean, see, we think when people say, well, they can't travel, they think in conventional terms of how we're traveling now. Of course not. That's impossible. Nobody could get here the way we travel.
And you know, one of the things we have to constantly remind ourselves, we've only been flying for a little over 100 years. So you can imagine the civilization a million years advanced than ourselves.
That's right.
Just because we can't do it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And you know, the general consensus scientifically from most of the people I've talked to, even Brian Greene and others, say that, you know, we're probably, you know, the Drake equation and probability one and Merrick Zell, they've all written these books, that we can't be alone. The probability of life out there is one, I mean, 100%. But it's fascinating to me that making that assumption, they assume that the distances are just too vast and they can't get here. But that's, of course, by the technology that we have only in the last 100 years, right?
Stay with us, James. We're coming back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take final phone calls here. Split show. I'll tell you in just a moment what you can expect next hour. Well, we've got a split program for you. So next hour, we're going to be talking with Thomas Stryker, his work, Extraplanetary Experiences, Alien-Human Contact, The Expansion of Consciousness. I'm looking forward to talking with Thomas. He is a student of the late Dr. John Mack. So get ready for that. When we come back with James Fox, more questions and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. James, when you did Out of the Blue back in 2003 with Gordon Cooper, that too must have been an incredible experience for you. Here's an astronaut who I am sure told you the the inside scoop on what he thinks he saw when he was in his jet plane.
Absolutely, I did. I have that all on camera, and that was a turning point for my father, who's a mainstream journalist. You know, when I took him to that interview in 98, I believe it was 1998, he left because, you know, Gordon Cooper was an iconic figure of his generation. And my dad said, my God, if this guy's, you know, talking about it, there must be something to this. And, you know, that's another thing, the issue I have with you know, Colonel John Alexander's position is that, you know, Gordon told me that he personally handed over video or film footage of a landed flying saucer. I think it was like circa 1953, 54, that was never to be seen or heard from again. That, in my view, is a cover-up. You don't have definitive proof like that, you know, released to the general public without a you know what I mean?
So oh, exactly.
No, it was a phenomenal experience. I mean, you know, you got a guy that's, you know, an astronaut. He was one of the last American astronauts to go up in space alone. I think he orbited the planet 22 times. And for someone of his caliber, of his stature, to say, hey, look, you know, I not only saw them when I was piloting a jet plane over Germany, and he talked about these lateral movements these saucers would make, but there was one filmed during the installation of an F-86 fighter jet runway. And the film footage I handled personally, had it developed. I saw it. He didn't play it, but he looked it up and held it up the window and saw it was good footage. And it was handed over to Washington and never to be seen or heard from again.
That's amazing. I mean, why would an astronaut with his credentials lie to you? He wouldn't.
No. And, you know, I have him on camera saying, I don't really give a bleep, you know, whether you believe me or not, but this is what happened. And I'm not out there to sell crazy. I'm not out there to sell UFOs. He wasn't looking to find me. You know, I actually hunted him down and, you know, sort of, please give me an interview.
When you were with me on Larry King's show and we had Buzz Aldrin there.
That was
Buzz,
really frustrating for me.
Yeah,
you know?
Buzz would not talk about any. All he talked about was his own capsule, and he was holding that little model. I'm looking at it going, Larry, get him. But he wouldn't.
You know, do you know what happened in the green room just prior to that interview?
I had left. I was in there with Aldrin. You were there. And then I walked out. What did I miss?
Okay, so what you basically missed was I was, because the last, you know, unfortunately, his sister, Faye Ann Aldrin, who I was good friends with, just died. And she was pushing for years for me to get an interview with him about his UFO experiences. According to her, he's had two. And he actually granted an interview up, you know, for me in the south of France in 99, I think it was. And then pulled the carpet out from under me when I'd flown a whole crew over there, borrowed money, blah, blah, blah. And the next time I actually had any interaction with him was our 2000, I think it was 2007, wasn't it?
That's right, right around there.
Yeah. Yeah. So in any case, yeah, and that was the first time I'd really had any direct interaction with him. It was us going on Larry King. I thought, well, I'm going to really kind of, you know, call him on this. And the governor pulled me aside and he's like, look, this I landed on the moon with Neil Armstrong. He's larger than life. You can't do that on live television. You really can't. And so I didn't, but I really wanted to.
I know you did.
It was really frustrating.
I wanted Larry to chase him, and he didn't do it.
He said to me on the phone, and I swear on my, just buried my father a month and a half ago, and I on my father's grave, he told me, how's my story going to change anything? And I said, well, it takes people of your caliber, of your stature, to come forward to help elevate this out of the rut it's in. And he said, well, I'm not willing to jeopardize the initiative of putting civilians, developing a rocket to put civilians into outer space. And he wasn't willing to jeopardize that initiative because Paul Allen had just invested in SETI and apparently was labeled some UFO nut. And so he's like, he pulled out.
Do you remember the rumor we've heard too, James, in the field here, where Armstrong, when he was on the moon back in 69, talked back to mission control and said something about, we can see them on the rim of a crater. They look like they're watching us. Was that a myth, or were you ever able to cooperate that?
Well, the closest I came to that to any encounter on Apollo 11 was through Buzz Aldrin's sister Faye Ann Aldrin, as well as Mickey Rooney, the Legend of Bobby Taggart. I think Mickey Rooney.
Mickey Rooney, the actor?
Yes, sir. I worked on a movie with him back in 1993 called The Legend of Bobby Taggart, and him and his wife Jan Rooney said that he had shared with them UFO encounters. And from according to his sister, I did not hear the details of this sighting, But according to his sister, they had an object follow them on the way to the moon. She did not talk about an object on the moon with me. But that's as close as I've gotten to him. He did not deny it. When I talked to him on the phone in the south of France, he didn't say it. He said, how is my experience going to change anything?
Yeah.
And I, it takes people like you, you know, and that's, we got in this kind of little debate about it, and he was like, well, I'm not going to jeopardize this initiative. He's trying to get funding, blah, blah, blah. And I told you the story from there, so.
Right. All right. Let's go to the calls. West of the Rockies, Tyler in Portland, Oregon. Go ahead, Tyler.
James, I wanted to recommend a case for you and your producers that I think you might find interesting.
I'm grabbing a pen right now.
Pardon?
Go.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Between 2000 and 2007, there was a series of very extremely close UFO sightings over the sea in Turkey. Roger Lear was over there for 2 years, and he was on the beach literally watching this thing. If, next time you see Roger Lear, ask him about the Turkey UFO video.
I talked to Roger Lear about it, and I proposed it in this last series, and I'm definitely proposing it in if we get any future series, because it was high-def, it was a high-def camera given to them. They went to Turkey, and they filmed this object over the ocean, and it's incredible.
Yeah, there was 9 witnesses. It was actually given to the Turkish state-sponsored astronomy board and science board to review, and they couldn't find any evidence of a hoax.
It's
such an amazing video. Everybody ought to Google Turkey UFO video. It is absolutely – it will – amaze you to watch that video. It's absolutely amazing.
You're totally right. I completely agree with you. I thought that video footage was phenomenal.
There's so many great cases out there, James.
So many cases. Amazing to me. You know, just today I went on Fox News and the guy says to me, "Well, how come there's, you know, 'cause it's the typical tongue-in-cheek kind of thing." And
yeah,
I'm so used to that, right? And he's like, "Well, how come there's never been any good UFO pictures?" Well, let's see. We could start back in 1950 with McMinnville, Oregon, if you like.
That's right.
Or we can go to 1965, the Santa Ana.
What about 52? Look at this picture over the Capitol, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So the list goes on and on and on. There have been broad daylight, high res, in focus, points of reference, multiple eyewitnesses, photographs taken for decades. We know that. But for some reason, they don't seem to count. I don't know.
You've got to, if the series continues, do the military folks who have gone public with the missile silo UFO stories.
Phenomenal stuff, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Phenomenal Absolutely. Stuff. I mean, anytime there's like sort of mingling with nuclear weapons and missiles, that's incredible. And I don't know, God, there's something I'd love to talk about, but I probably don't have the time. But basically, I stumbled upon, during some research with National Geographic, a case that was just incredible. Does anybody remember the case that happened at Holloman Air Force Base back in 1950s?
That was another one, a classic.
The landing and the entities coming out. Well, I got closer to that story than I've ever been. And one of the people that, I don't know how much I can release on this stuff, but anyway, there's footage, there's official Air Force footage of a case exactly like that that I'm trying to get my hands on right now, but we're getting close. I've confirmed the fact that that they have it. It's just a point of me getting my hands on it. I'm sorry. I don't know how much I can disclose.
That's
right,
okay.
Now,
Let's go to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and Voyer is with us. Hello, Voyer.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, what's the best way to get like a video to you guys? We got a bunch of videos. Three of them that we got here in Baton Rouge in broad daylight.
I love you guys. You guys are amazing. Gosh, you know, if you can communicate with me, either if you can just go to IKnowWhatISaw.com or just Google I Know What I Saw, because it sounds like you know what you saw and you filmed.
And the website is
email, and you can just send me an email and we can be in touch directly. Is that okay?
Yeah, that'd be great. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. I can't thank you enough for calling in tonight.
I know what I saw, themovie.com, right?
You got it.
All right. Let's go to Lewis. Truck Driving in Oregon is with us. Hey, Lewis, go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, got a good program. I got two things real quick. But after the Phoenix Lights, I was listening to a radio station called KUPD in Guadalupe. One of the pilots that was sent out to go look at the lights, he called in. And you could hear it in his voice that he said, "This is not ours." He flew under it and on the side of it. And his buddy called in a couple days later, and he said that the military found out, and they sent him to Iceland.
Well, the thing you got to be careful of about calling into shows is you really don't know who's on the other end.
Yeah, you know, well, hold on a second. So, I'm sorry, you're referring to, thank you, sir, for calling in, by the way. You're referring to the 1997 Phoenix Lights case?
Right,
yeah,
right.
Okay, and you're saying that one of the jets that was scrambled to intercept the UFO got a visual on it?
He got a visual on it. He commented on the radio station because they all listened to KUPD. And like I said, a couple days later, his buddy called in and said that, you know, the military found out and they sent him out. They shipped him to Iceland because he had called in the radio station and said what he had saw.
I had Governor Simonton told me personally that he believed that they scrambled jets to intercept that thing. And apparently, according to the stories that I've been told, I haven't talked to any pilots specifically, but I've talked to their friends, and apparently as they approached it, they could have landed on the thing.
Landed on it? That's an amazing
That's what they
story.
Told me. They could have landed on it.
Well, it was big. There's no doubt about that. Lewis, did you have another question, Lewis?
I was driving about 8 miles before I got to Santa Fe, and the sun had just barely set. I happened to look up, and it was like a real bright amber light that was going south, and it was moving slow. As it got to my window, you could hold your hand out about 2 foot. There's a star on the back side of it. That star went dim, so they have good cloaking device. This amber light broke into two lights. One was going south, one was going southeast. Forgive me, I'm a little nervous. But this, whatever it is, they got cloaking, and this thing is huge, and it didn't make any kind of trail or anything. And this was probably about 4 years ago.
I can't tell you how many stories I've heard of that. And I really thank you for calling in tonight. That's and for sharing that stuff.
James, when we hear the stories that they could be from within this planet, they could be dimensional, they could be from other planets. Isn't it more romantic to think they're coming from other planets?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. I'd like to think they are.
Me too. Though I believe in the multiverse theory, there's no doubt about that, and I believe that there could be time travel for, you know, if we survive a million more years and we develop time travel, and maybe they did come back here. You know, who knows? But
while we're on the topic really quickly, the Phoenix Lights case, one of the guys I interviewed, you know, he's a real nuts and bolts character. He's a former pilot. And I did this incredible interview with him. And at the end of it, he said, I was just about to shut the cameras off. There's one more thing. And I kind of said, okay, well, you know, what is it? Forget it. You know, and I said, no. I want to know. What is it? What?
Yeah.
What's
yeah.
bothering you? It's one more thing. You know, long story short, I finally pried it out of him. He knew what he was about to tell me was going to be perceived as crazy. I didn't, but I've heard this before. He said, they told me something. So I said, they told you something? He said, yeah, they put it in my, forget it, you know, this kind of thing. And he said, he told him, hey, we're not here to harm you. That's what he said. And when he saw it, that's the message that came into his head, we're not here to harm you.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure if they're not here to harm us. I think
maybe the particular craft that he saw, the occupants, well, I don't know.
Well, it depends. That's right. They could be coming from different systems.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let's go to Aaron in Richmond, Virginia. You're up with us. Go ahead, Aaron.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So many things to say, really, but I called initially because today the owner of the shop I work in came in to work to cover for me because I had been sick in the morning, and we were talking for a while, and she was like, oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you on the way here. I saw the weirdest thing. She said she pulled over on the side of the road a little bit outside of the city of Richmond on her way in. So it was around 11 in the morning. And she said that she saw this thing. It was going along the tree line. It was maybe 10 stories up. It was not a helicopter or a plane. It didn't have any propeller. It was making no sound. She pulled over to see because she thought it was going to crash onto the road, and she didn't want to keep going forward if it was coming down. There is a flight path, but she said that, you know, it was way too low to be in the flight path that's normally, you know, planes are coming and going in this area. And she's not the kind of person. We had never discussed it. I've had my own personal, I guess, very close encounter.
And this was today.
This was today in Richmond, Virginia.
Wow.
About 11 this morning. And she's like she didn't want me. I was like, I'm going to call police non-emergency to see if you know, anybody else called in about it. And she was like, no. Like, she's been checking. She was checking Google, like, news.
You guys should ask around, because the likelihood of someone else having spotted it and photographed it could be high.
Well, and she said that it was just hovering there, and then it disappeared behind the tree line, but she saw it for, like, maybe 45 seconds, and that's, you know, and she said there were so many other people driving, and it was so weird because she was seeing this thing so clearly and so different from anything she's ever seen, but nobody else seemed to notice it because everybody else was just zooming by, and she was the only person that was, like, stopped.
Well, if anybody out there listening had seen the same craft and captured a photograph of it, please, 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 the sugar on top. Get in touch with us and then get us a picture.
James, do you stay in touch with Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center?
I do. I hear from him often. He's amazing. He's an encyclopedia of knowledge.
Great source. Let's take maybe one more call or two. Let's go to Byron in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Go ahead, Byron.
Yeah, I was just going to give you and James a brief story about something that happened to me about 14 years ago.
Okay, make it really tight. Go
yep.
ahead.
All right, real quick. I was up at Camp Napawan in Wisconsin, up by one of the lakes there late at night. I watched what I thought was a satellite, you know, traveling along, and then it stopped, got brighter, dimmed, pulled about a 160-degree turn, and took off at amazing speed.
Wow.
How many times have we heard that, George?
It's that amazing speed
yep.
that always does it.
I remember so many different witnesses trying to describe to me, had the acceleration. Had I blinked, I would have missed it. It looked like it just, you know, disappeared in place. You know, no sound, no air disturbance, no sonic boom. How is that possible?
So true. And let me tell everybody listening to you right now, James, that as they know, I've known you for a number of years now. You are a very top-notch investigator and producer. You want to get to the bottom of this. And, you know, on behalf of all of us who are in this business trying to get these answers, thank you for what you do, Jim.
Hey, you know what? It's funny you should say that, because I wanted to thank you for what you did. I mean, what you do is amazing, providing a platform for people like myself and other researchers. And I know that we all have our differences, but I respect each and every one of you guys, because it's not an easy field to be in. There's the ridicule, giggle factor. But I think we're making progress, continue to make progress, continue to support each other. Let's embrace diversity with the whole subject matter. And hopefully all your listeners out there will tune in to National Geographic Chasing UFOs Friday night. That's June 29th at 9 p.m. And, you know, show us some love.
Well, and that's number one of eight, so you've got a great way to go, and let's hope you get renewed after that, and it just keeps going. James Fox, thank you so much. We'll be back in just a moment, because all of this continues as we talk about alien abductions next on Coast to Coast AM.